My name is Tom Chick. You're listening to the Quarter to Three Movie Podcast. This week we will be discussing Legion. We have seen it. If you have not seen it, we will be discussing it spoilery-wise. So you might want to bail if you have not seen it. You know what? You know what? Even
just
if
bail.
You haven't seen Legion, no. Even if you haven't seen Legion, stick around. You can't spoil a movie like this. So I am here, by the way, with Christian Malinsky.
I think you know what I'm going to say here. I prefer to be called Jeep.
Oh, good one.
Kelly Wand, do you have a tagline for us this week?
A man does not have to be an angel to be a saint.
Nice.
And now, do you guys know why we're playing this R.E.M. song?
No, why'd you pick that one?
Because it's your favorite?
I always have to wade through all of it to ask you, why are you picking these songs? I never understand.
But I just thought that was such
a predictable choice.
No, because the video has an angel in it.
No one's going to... No, our listeners don't remember that.
I don't even know what a video is.
Yeah, video. What?
You guys aren't part of the MTV generation. All right.
Hey, before we get to Legion, can I just ask if you guys have read or heard about the post-Avatar? I thought this was an Onion article, but apparently it's a worldwide phenomenon where people see Avatar, like nerds, you know, like our listeners, basically, and they go into depression afterwards because they can't get to Pandora. The planet. Yeah,
Dingus is hosting the site that started that, by the way.
You don't believe me, do you? You think I just...
No, you know what, Kelly Wand? I believe you, and this is like 2 weeks
old.
Yeah,
right about.
And it gets passed around, and I think it's an overblown reaction to a bunch of goofballs on a message forum, and I'm sure most of them are great laugh about the fact that this is getting so much attention. No, this has been mentioned on national radio, on television.
How would they think to do that? How would they perpetrate a Richard Heaney-sized hoax like that on the likes of us?
I don't think it's a hoax. I think it's just a bunch of goofballs, and I'm sure they're delighted with all the attention they're getting, and now you're adding to it. I hope you're happy.
No, I think you're crazy. Do you have a good source for what that it's not, that it's an artificial, that I'm stupid and gullible, besides the obvious truth of it?
Well, you know, I don't know. Have you seen, Kelly Wand, the website of people who are really bummed that Paul Bettany is not actually an angel? There's a bunch of those.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
There's also a lot of people who are really upset that Lucas Black isn't retarded.
Whoa. I don't know where you were going with that, and I'm going to have to take issue. Let's talk about this movie. You know what? Instead of talking about this movie, here's what I'd like to do. I would like Kelly Wand to just relate the plot of the movie. Kelly Wand, how does Legion open?
Someone saying something about being tired of the bullshit. And then some cops get ambushed by...
Wait, you forgot when Michael Biehn shows up.
Right. It's Michael Biehn, and then the cops get possessed by angels, but they're demons, but it's not Dan Brown. And Legion was the name of the William Peter Blatty novel sequel to The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
I read that.
The inspiration for Exorcist 3, the movie he directed, which also had an old woman crawling on a ceiling. And both ceilings were played by Kevin Bacon. That's what happens in Legion.
Very nice, Kelly.
Ken Bacon.
Dingus, why would you make a joke about Lucas Black being retarded?
I don't know, but I don't want to talk about
it
anymore.
That's not funny.
I'm going to get in big trouble for that.
Okay,
that's an insult to the retarded.
Kelly Wand, do you have any guilty pleasures about this movie? What's something? I want us to go around the room and everybody say something nice about Legion. Kelly Wand, you start.
I like it. The scene, any movie where an old lady gets hit in the head with a frying pan.
Okay. Dingus, what's something that you liked about Legion?
I don't have to narrow it down. I liked a lot about Legion, even though it's a total piece of crap. And I freaking love Paul Bettany, and I cannot figure out how he landed in this other than maybe he actually got thrown out of heaven and fell into this movie, because I love him. And there's a bunch of stuff I loved about this.
Okay, Dingus, now you're talking in your ironic voice. Is that correct?
No, I'm not. I am not talking in my ironic
voice. He's Avatar depressing us.
There's plenty of stuff that I had a great deal of fun. I didn't mean to say fun. That I really...
Oh, Paradise Falls. Thanks, James Cameron.
Yeah. So you actually liked Paul Bettany?
Oh, yeah, a great deal.
Okay, because I got to say, I had a great time at this movie. Legion is why... listen to this. Hold on. Everybody calm down. Nobody panic.
Stand down.
Legion is awful, but it is why I see so many movies. Because when you stumble across an absolute, wacky, goofball piece of junk like Legion... It was almost impossible for me not to have a great time watching this movie. It's terrible, and I loved that about it. However, Dingus, I will say...
It wasn't fun terrible. You're so overselling.
Okay, hold on. I want to say to Dingus, I didn't care for Paul Bettany at all. I really felt like he was phoning it in. So I want to hear more from you about why you liked him, because that was one of the things I was really disappointed in. And then we'll get to you, Kelly Wand, who maintains that it's not terrible in a fun way, whereas I thought it was terrible in a fun way. But first thing is, so you're actually serious. You really did like what Paul Bettany was doing.
There's a scene that he has with Lucas Black when he has this extended monologue where he starts with, "He lost faith, I didn't." And he does that whole thing when he chose your kind, and he's telling why he fell in love with humanity. And he has this whole extended gobbledygook about being lost is so close to being found, and you're the reason I still have faith. And I just loved him. I totally loved him. And I just kept thinking, why are you here? What are you doing here?
That's what I was asking myself.
I was just so pleased that it just felt like he had been like some court of law had this was community service for something he had done, and he had to be in this movie with Dennis Quaid. And I thought he was great. I didn't think he was phoning it in at all. I thought he was doing his best.
Now, the movie was very even-handed in that. So we, in case you haven't seen it and you're listening, stick around. This movie can't be spoiled by spoilers. It's an end of the world. It's not even an end of the world movie. It's a siege movie. It's one of those typical roadhouses, and it's getting attacked. I mean, this is basically...
Except that they don't get attacked. The Legion just sits there.
okay, we'll go into that in a minute. But anyway, everybody, the movie is very even-handed in that during this siege, it makes a point to give everyone a monologue. Actor is left out. Every actor gets a monologue. You know, Charles Dutton even cries for some inexplicable reason. And so everybody gets a little backstory. And the character development is all, this is the thing too. None of the character development is really in what people do. It's all in their monologues. It's like everybody takes...
Yeah, they get a monologue and then they're dead.
Yeah. And
except for the people you don't think are going to die.
And it didn't kill a lot of people. It was pretty protective of its characters, it seemed. I mean, it did in the end, but like there weren't a lot of... did it kill? Who lived?
Only the two main characters. What the hell are you talking about? And the baby. Oh, look, a baby lived. Thanks, James Cameron.
I guess it's still everyone. You're right. You know what? Yeah. And actually
like, Charles Dutton's death scene, spoiler alert, was another thing I liked about the movie.
Oh, right. John Tinney exploded acid onto him.
Yeah.
Right.
Why did John Tinney... I have so many questions.
Well, now you realize, Kelly Wand, there are not going to be any good answers to these questions. But
I want your answer, because you're an apologist for... You can explain stuff.
Maybe. Well, so, okay, well, Kelly Wand, you think that this movie wasn't good even in a fun, crappy movie way. You maintain... Like,
no,
what?
He cuts away from every money shot of every action sequence.
Well, the action sequences were pretty odd. Like, I felt... There's a lot of promise, too, that doesn't give... Like, we only see... You know, you get the crazy old lady and the ice cream man, and then it's sort of like, oh, okay, we're done with demons. You know, that's...
Yeah, how come... Yeah, that's the last triple-jointed dude was the ice cream demon.
And I thought, seeing that, I'm like, oh, we're going to have a bunch of crazy demons.
Legion, right.
They blew their wad early there.
Well, they tricked us into going, oh, cool, there's going to be a legion of triple-jointed ice cream demons.
Right.
And then they show one CG shot... of a big mob surrounding the place, getting ready to attack it, and then they don't attack, and then they just leave. I like also that the angels are winged beings, but they always arrive by car. I thought that was kind of cool.
Did Gabriel arrive by car? He flew in. No, he flew in with the tripod sound effect from War of the
Worlds. Weren't they all angels?
Yes. That was awesome. The tripod sound effect was awesome.
I was totally thinking, wow, there's going to be a tripod, but they didn't. And do you guys know who that actor was, by the way, who played Gabriel? Let's talk about the actors before we give you grief, Kelly Wand, which we're going to get around to. Did you guys recognize Gabriel?
I didn't recognize him, but he made an impression on me. His name is like Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant. And viewers.
He plays for Oklahoma. He's an NBA player, actually.
Mm. What?
Never mind.
Viewers of Lost will know him. He had a role in several episodes of Lost as this super badass mercenary guy.
Oh, that, right.
So anybody who's seen Lost, he'll have some sort of cred with them when he shows up and you're like, oh, that guy's badass. Because on Lost, he shoots Ben's daughter, by the way.
Yeah. How does he die? On Lost.
Lost for a few minutes.
You can't spoil Lost. I liked that guy in this movie. I liked their little scene on the Titus Andronicus heaven set. I liked him.
And I thought their fight scene was okay. The sort of Angels WWF scene was pretty cool. I was okay with the choreography of it. And
you wanted
to see
Angels fight with M16s.
Well, no.
I love it when supernatural beings have to use guns. I love that.
Not only guns, but Gabriel has a mace, and blades pop out of the mace, and then blades pop out of those blades, and then it can shoot a spike like 2 feet forward, and then it can spin the head of the mace around like a drill bit on an oil well. I mean, that's like a well-equipped angel. And his wings are armor, like bulletproof wings.
Great. I loved that. I loved the sound effects of the wings deflecting the bullets.
Yeah.
I love the idea that the wings are metallic or that kind of armor. And that sort of heightens what you know, Paul Bettany cutting off his wings means. I love that.
Okay, so let's talk about
why did Paul Bettany cut his wings off then, if they're such great armor? Which they also didn't show. He cuts up his wings, and I thought he killed the dog because it's shot so incompetently. You see blood right after the dog barks, and you don't hear the dog bark. You go, oh, he killed the dog? Why? And
he does kill the dog, doesn't he? Because the dog is barking. It's going to give him away.
No, he cuts off his wings. Good to give away to who?
He cuts off the dog's wings?
Effortlessly?
It was Cerberus.
Worst podcast ever.
The dog freaked me out because it totally came in the rear speaker in the theater I was in, and it was loud, and I thought somebody had a dog behind me.
Oh, we're not far from that. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen.
And, you know, the way he wields the knife when he's cutting the wings doesn't work at all, of course. I mean, physically. I mean, the way the knife comes down and then the wings are off. But I didn't care about any of that. I liked the idea of it. I liked him falling out of heaven. God bless him. And by the way, Kelly, there's no way he can drive a police car if he's got wings.
Exactly. That's why he had to cut his wings off.
Why did he just fly there?
Oh, that's a good point. Dingus rebuttal.
Because of Homeland Security, they would have shot him out of the sky.
Ah, Sam's. That's right.
But he would have had armor with his wings.
Yeah, but still.
They don't deflect Sam's, Kelly Wan. Just low-caliber ammunition. Small arms fire.
Well, there's something else that happens when he cuts off his wings. It's this collar.
What's
it's like
with
this
them?
This shock collar that comes off of his neck. And the idea, and he says this later in this wonderful line, the idea is that the wings for him have been a burden, and he says that later when Gabriel taunts him about it. He says that. I can't remember what the actual line is, but he says not having them. It's something about it's a dream not having the burden of my wings anymore. And you see that when he cuts them off, you see the collar fall to the ground with this sort of clang like the ring in Lord of the Rings when it falls to the floor. It's obvious that this collar is something that has kept him in service.
I prefer to think of it as more of a restraining bolt.
Okay, good.
I prefer to think of this Foley work.
okay, so we have a little turn, and it also gets further into the Terminator motif with Sarah Connor as just a waitress who's not prepared to train the savior of mankind. That later on gets very Terminator-y. Here we go. Here's the actor that I think emerged with his dignity most intact. And I love this guy. And he's been in a few terrible movies. One terrible movie. And he almost single-handedly, with the help of Paul Walker, elevated this terrible movie. But Tyrese Gibson from the second Fast and the Furious. So one of the things I was most fascinated with watching this movie, poor Lucas Black has – the man – I love the guy, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But he has no – charisma or presence whatsoever. It's sort of like they started filming and the stand-in was still there and the actor hadn't come on the set yet. And I just get this sense that he's just, he's so flat. And that works fine when you're playing a little sullen kid like in Sling Blade or American Gothic. But now that he's gotten older, and he's a fairly good-looking fella, it's just so sad seeing him next to someone like Tyrese Gibson, who is just incredibly magnetic. I mean, that guy could just be reading the phone book, and it would be compelling, I think.
Yeah, and his character's more interesting. And you go, oh, it's going to be a gangster versus...
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think they did much with his character at all. I mean,
No, but they should have.
They could have.
Think of how great it would be if those guys had switched roles.
Yes.
I know. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I agree with you, Tom. He's got a lot of charisma, and I like watching him. And when he shows up, I kind of felt relieved. And I kind of was disappointed when the old woman gets shot, and I'm like, oh, great, the black guy shot her. And that's what they do. That's what they go with. And then they have this heartfelt scene with Charles Dutton on the roof where they're talking about, guns. And I just – I think that if they could have switched roles, how interesting would that have been?
Yeah. Now, you're saying Lucas Black and Tyrese Gibson?
Yeah.
Switching roles? Yeah. But then who would – he would be Randy Quaid's son?
Dennis.
Dennis Quaid's son?
Well, why not? He could have been his stepson. I mean, the mother's out of the picture. Why not?
Okay.
I mean, they dispense with her, before the movie even starts, and Dennis Quaid rages on, which – can I just – insert it here real quick. Great. Just great Bush beer product placement. And I'll just leave it at that.
I always like it when a character has gone through some horrible calamity, like the woman who loses her husband, and he gives her the beer, and there's almost like a little light. Maybe they're flirting, maybe not. I love watching how when the writer hasn't really written any sort of grieving or reaction, so we just sort of have the little light scene over the beer with the wife and Dennis Quaid. That was just so.
Yeah.
But you know what? If I was married to John Tenney, I don't think I would be that bummed about him getting killed either. He's no great catch. John Tenney plays like the guy. I just saw a terrible remake of The Stepfather, and John Tenney basically plays the same character. A guy who gets killed early on without alarming the audience over much.
Is Amber Heard nude in that?
No. In a bikini lot. She's naked a lot in The Informant. That's the one you want to see.
Informers.
Informers, thank you.
Don't get me started.
So earlier I made a crack about Lucas Black, and I feel a little bad about that. But the reason I did that is that early on, as he's like working on the car and he's like working on trying to chip away the dirt on the crib, and he's having early scenes with her in this. I don't know why I have no idea why there's a playground outside this diner other than to evoke Terminator 2. But there's a playground out there and they have a scene, and I just kept thinking, is he deliberately trying to play it like he's slow or like he has some sort of mental retardation thing going on? And I realized he's not doing that. He just comes across as a step behind everybody else in the movie.
Yeah. I thought that was his character. He's ineffectual, like the Nick Nolte dude in Cape Fear. Kind of.
Well, and he's got that hardcore Alabama twang, too. Like, that always sounds – it was in Fast and Furious, too. And that always sounds like an affectation, but I think it's genuine. I think Lucas Black really talks that way.
I thought he was trying to sound like Quaid.
I think he sounds like that too, and I really liked him like in Friday Night Lights. I think it works in that kind of film, but and it probably would have worked here. It just felt like he was. I just kept thinking of the kid in The Seventh Sign, and like they gussied him up and they cast a prettier guy to play him. He's not supposed to be a guy who's retarded, but he just seems like he's just not there. And I guess it's more what you're talking about, Tom. He just doesn't pop. But it carries over the character because he can't shoot anybody. He can't do anything until, even when that creepy little kid is attacking her. I expected, okay, this is the payoff where Lucas Black comes through and stops this little kid. But no, he's nowhere to be found. He's off.
No. He never does anything. He falls over a cliff, somehow survives it.
Oh, no, but he grabs the angel and goes over the cliff. He, like, sacrifices.
Yeah, but then
himself.
He doesn't.
There you go.
Well, he doesn't die.
That's
and
true.
He doesn't kill the angel. He goes over two.
That's true. They deny him even his moment of triumph. the end. That's awesome.
He gets his arms tattooed.
My favorite line reading was after Paul Bettany has come back, like in a sort of Gandalf form or whatever, and he dispatches Gabriel, and then as he's flying off, and it's just, it's an amazing line reading. You cannot fake a line reading this bad. Lucas Black has some line like, will we see you again?
Yeah, I remember.
That was just beautiful. I mean, oh, my heart sang at that. You just can't, bad acting like that, you just can't fake it. It was so sincere.
Can I give my favorite Lucas Black line?
Please do, yes. Real quick, Dingus, what was Lucas Black's character's name?
I can't remember. Wait. No, it was Rav4. He was called Rav4.
Was his last name Hudson? Was it Jeep Hudson?
I don't know.
If Kelly hadn't... Kelly, you looked this up before we saw the movie. You made some crack about looking up the name on IMDb. I think that if you hadn't warned me when I had been watching Legion, I don't think I would have believed they were saying Jeep. I would have thought it was like Jeff, or I wasn't hearing it correctly or something.
I had to tell someone.
I could not believe they named him Jeep. Okay, Dingus, what was your favorite Lucas Black line from Legion?
Well, I kept hearing it, and I kept hoping, oh, please let it be Jeep. And I kept thinking, no, it can't be that. It's got to be something else. And I just kept, please let it be. It was Jeep Hansen.
Hansen. It's <Yeah. laughs> even better.
Jeep Hansen. Yeah.
After the band.
That's where Hansen wound up.
Yeah.
Dingus, what's your favorite Jeep Hansen line?
Okay, my favorite Jeep Hansen line, and this is where I started to think that, wait, are we going for a tongue-in-cheek here thing? Because there's no way this line can be real. And I'll let you guys – okay, the line is this. No shark teeth, Pop.
That's how they tell when they're possessed by angels, you see. That's the movie rules in effect, Dingus.
Well, Dennis Quaid, who, oh, God, he's so horrible in this. He's screaming at Paul Bettany, show me your teeth, your goddamn teeth. And he does. And the line is, no shark teeth? I love that.
Because that's in case – that's for anybody who's blind watching the movie who can't see when he reveals that his teeth are normal. We need a line to reinforce, yes, these are normal teeth.
And he's assuming Quaid didn't see that too.
Right. In case you didn't notice, Dad,
that guy next
looking
to me.
At them. Yeah.
No shark teeth, Pop.
You know all the sharks we see in this desert here? I don't see the teeth in there.
Kelly, wanted to cut you off. You were going to say you had some observation about why you liked Legion so much.
Yeah, I really like reveals, and this was true of Book of Eli and Terminator, reveals of caches of hundreds of weapons for a handful of people that never get fired, instead of a handful of weapons and like thousands of bullets.
But at least here we showed them acquiring the weapons.
No, we didn't. He took them out of the trunk of the police car. We don't know how he got them.
Oh, no, we
yes,
do.
We do. He That's the first them. Scene of the movie.
Yeah, you probably came in late, Kelly Wand.
How does he get them?
He goes into this happy toy store place and kills a guy, and then he goes into this arsenal and he's just picking weapons off. And he comes out of the – this is why the cop car stops. He comes out with these gigantic – I love these duffel bags. I've got to find them that could carry bodies. He's got these huge duffel bags full of weapons when the dudes in the cop car stop him.
Huh.
Yeah, he definitely – we see him get the guns. And by the way, those are the same duffel bags that they used for the money in the bank heist in Heat. I don't know if you guys know that. A little trivia for you right there.
Help me out just real quick.
Okay.
Do we have any sense – and I know I'm a stickler for rules and it's
no it's rules in this movie. This movie is rules free, but go ahead. What?
I know it's a fool's errand to try to figure that out. But why can none of the people in this diner get possessed by the angels?
Tom?
Because – well, actually, this is established in the movie. The angels – the possession can't get close to the baby. As long as they're in the radius of the baby, they're immune.
So is everyone possessed in the whole world except these people?
Yeah.
So the whole world's gone.
Yeah.
But we never see that.
Well, they don't have the budget for that. Hello? They had to pay Paul Bettany something, you know? That guy can't be cheap.
I would think
I remember my favorite Quaid line is when the thing on the TV goes, "This is not a test," and he goes, "Hey, look, it's one of those test things." Yeah. I like that.
Now, I really did like. I'm sorry.
On screen.
I got to say, having discussed, and this is you know, we can see elements in this movie of Prophecy, the Christopher Walken thing, certainly of Terminator, of all these Assault on Precinct 13 movies, where there's a siege. I really liked the way that it tries to rip off, and it does fairly successfully, because it's easy to start a horror movie. It's hard to follow up and finish one, but I really liked the early parts, which were basically drawn from the diner scene in The Birds, where you've got a small cast of characters, and it's the end of the world, and they're talking about it. And we talked at length about that scene in The Birds, which was sort of a gas station scene, and this is the same kind of thing. I really liked the way that sort of began. I was like, okay, here's our characters. Let's watch it unfold. I enjoyed that part of it a lot.
I like siege movies in general, and I hated this one.
So what was wrong with the siege? I thought was a little understaged.
Because there's no spatial anything. Like, right. They're besieged by people who won't attack them.
Well, that's also in the rules. They say that this is just a test of their strength, and that they're then going to prey on their weaknesses. I don't know. I mean, I agree with you, Kelly. That whole siege thing was just like a lot of second unit footage, just sort of edited in with shots of the actors shooting guns in a general direction. But I loved, by the way, those were such video game sequences. You know, the cars coming up and the rocket launcher coming up. You know, you use the rocket launcher to attack them, and then the people get out of the cars, and there's sort of the human wave attack, and you just mow them down. That all was like something straight out of a crappy video game. Just first-person shooter sort of motifs going on there.
And Charles Dent looked like Coach from L4-D2.
Ah, very good. Very good, Kelly Wand.
Definitely. And the whole running out to the minivan, that definitely had a feel of like, we have to go do that.
Yeah. And
they didn't establish, like, never mind, we've gone over it. But, like, the people who were attacking them just left a bunch of times and then came back.
Well, they were testing them. I'm sure that it was just.
So the test is it was a feint.
It was a feint. You know, that's a that's a sound military tactic.
So Gabriel, okay, so God basically lied to his own hitman about what he wanted done.
Oh no, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Let's talk a bit about the macro events going on here.
Wait. Before we get to that, let me just say one more thing about the attack, and then I do want to go to what you're talking about, Tom. There was one thing about one of the waves of attacks that I really thought was interesting and weird, and that's when what I forget what the actor's name is, that dude you talked about who gets yanked out the window.
John Tenney.
John Tenney. There's a moment where a girl who is obviously supposed to be like the daughter jumps up and says, "See what you made me do, mother."
Who's she talking to?
She's talking to the mother, and she's obviously a doppelganger for the girl, the hot girl. And it was this weird sort of thing, and
I guess
that's what's supposed to push the mother over the edge. But I wondered, are we going to go into some sort of weird, you've got another kid, or there's some sort of doppelganger kind of type of thing where their real world doubles are going to start showing up? It was this weird thing that was just totally thrown away, but it made me wonder, what the hell's going on?
And that's also, Dingus, like, you know, the ice cream guy, he gets out of the truck, and then he gets these super long, creepy limbs, and his mouth opens really wide, but nobody else does that. You know, why does this guy? And the old lady who's so resilient to frying pans and small arms fire.
Yeah, why'd she attack the baby?
Yeah, like, a lot of this stuff was really blissfully free of rules, which I think was a weakness.
Well, I have to think a couple of those things. I haven't seen many of the trailers or anything, but I did see the old woman in part of a trailer, and I have to think that's just trailer stuff. I don't know if the ice cream man showed up in a trailer, but that strikes me as, let's borrow some special effects from I Am Legend and make his jaw get big, and that'll be a good trailer image, and we'll never have to revisit it.
Right.
Well, that's what the whole movie was. It was all in the trailer.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it was you know, you could either see the trailer or see the movie, and seeing the trailer probably takes a lot less time and is cheaper. and you don't have to sit through as you don't get as much Lucas Black, I imagine. You know what, as a matter of fact, I can't imagine a single – is there a single scene of Lucas Black in the trailer? Like what Lucas Black line would you put in the trailer? I can't imagine one. I don't know. No shark teeth pop?
No shark teeth pop.
Will we see you again?
That's an applause line. What did the audience think when you saw this? Because mine was perplexed. And I always find audience reactions fascinating.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I was giggling a lot, so other people were giggling too. And I think I was having an influence on them. There weren't that many people in the theater. And it was, you know, it was early on Friday, so I don't know what real audiences thought.
I was giggling a lot as well.
I was moaning. Maybe you got to be in the mood for something really dumb. But it sucks, though. There's just no, like, I go, oh, here comes a money shot. Now, cuts away. He does that's what that Resident Evil dude does, the lame Paul Anderson.
Yeah, well, he's got a bigger budget, though, I imagine, for that Resident Evil. It's, you know what, Kelly Wand, you're right. I think of, like, the flies, like when they drive into the cloud of flies and it overwhelms the car, and you're like, oh, some of them are going to die.
And then, or
the
car. Back,
and then we cut to the diner, and they're like, oh, well, we couldn't make it. You know, it's like special effects sequence turned us around. You know, we can't.
Yeah, the flies didn't kill him.
So what were you going to say about God changing his mind, Tom?
So I liked, on a macro level, I liked where they were going. And I liked the early voiceover, by the way, which makes me wonder why I hate this in a movie. I saw this in a movie. It's Joel Schumacher's latest horror movie does the exact same thing. Joel Schumacher just did a movie about a Nazi wizard besieging a farmhouse in Wisconsin. And I'm not making any of that up. And the Joel Schumacher movie starts with a voiceover and ends with the very same voiceover in case we came in late, which Legion does the same thing. It starts with the voiceover, and in the very end of the movie, it's kind of like, hey, you guys remember when we said this stuff before? If you missed it, we're going to do it again.
You couldn't afford another line?
Really? Right.
Well, was that good?
So I did like the basic macro level, this idea that God just gets, I mean, this is the idea of the flood, that God just gets sick of it. And he's like, you know what? Reboot. I'm tired of this.
Well, why does he even need to send anything? Why doesn't he just make everyone disappear?
Because that would be a lot.
He can make universes. Okay, what? Sorry.
That would be a lot less visually impressive, and the movie would be shorter that way too.
But so that's also kind of the way he does things, and that's why I liked the advent of Michael having to come back down to stop Gabriel, because it's very Abraham Isaac. He doesn't do it himself. He sends somebody else to do it.
Right. And so, Dingus, you were getting a little bit of
sounds passive aggressive.
So it turns out, so Michael is like, no, God, forget this. I don't agree with what you're doing. I think you're making a bad call. So I'm going to go down to Earth. And I'm not clear why this one little baby is supposed to be a savior. I don't know where all that comes from. Like, if God just gets sick of the world and wants to end it, why does he allow a little baby savior to be a sort of an escape clause? I don't understand that. But for whatever reason.
Well, it's no different than choosing Lot.
Or Noah.
From Sodom and Gomorrah, saying, okay, we're going to find one guy and he's the guy.
Yeah, Lot was kind of a dick.
But wait, the God doesn't have any special plan for this. Does God send Michael? No. God's just going to let this one, there's one special baby, he's just going to get overwhelmed in the apocalypse?
No.
And he brings Michael back to life at the end, cheating, and then Michael tells Gabriel.
But right, that's only after Michael has showed God, hey, we still have people like Jeep Hansen in the world, so change your mind, God. And God's like, oh yeah, that Jeep guy, okay, I'm fine, I'm going to send you back. But I'm talking about before that happens. God gets sick of the world, and he's going to destroy it. Michael thinks it's a bad call, so he's going to go down and protect whatever this baby, right?
Well, no, it's not just that. It's that his edict was to kill that baby.
Oh, Michael had to kill the baby.
Michael was supposed to go kill that baby. And for whatever reason, which isn't explained in the film, this baby was going to be the turning point. I have no idea why, but
okay.
But Gabriel says, or one of them says that's oh no, it's the Lucas Black line. It says, oh, that's the order you couldn't obey.
That's the
order you turned around on.
Very good.
The order, he was given the order to kill that baby, and he said, no, I'm not going to do that.
So, but actually, that brings home, though, what I'm talking about, Dingus, is what's the role of this baby and why is this baby so important? And we don't know any of that. The movie can't be bothered to explain it. My theory is the reason this baby is important is because the guy who wrote the script was fond of the Terminator.
Yeah.
But I don't understand in the macro level what's...
Except he didn't make the mom badass.
I think the baby is really a MacGuffin. I mean, it's just... we need to save this baby, and it's something right. that the audience is really going to have a buy-in to.
Right. It's another example of a baby ruining a movie, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I like that macro level stuff of, you know, the one badass angel disobeying the rule, and then through his disobedience, God changing his mind. This idea, right. you know, that's a very traditionally Old Testament God. It's this whimsical, angry dude who does knee-jerk stuff and then changes his mind.
Maybe all their smoking made the baby tougher and more.
That's right. She was a smoker. You can't do that in movies. You can't.
Who
smoke
else did she sleep with? If Lucas Black was the only dude for like 1,000 miles,
it could have been a virgin birth, Kelly Wand.
Mm. Yeah, there you go.
She didn't say that.
That's true.
Did you listen to her monologue? Monologue apologist.
What was her monologue? She also, speaking of people like Lucas Black with very little presence. I mean, she had cleavage, but otherwise she had no presence. I don't know who that woman was. What did she get a monologue? She did.
Yeah, she had an awesome monologue that
it
made
started with. I didn't really want this baby. That's
that awesome. That was awesome. She had this great scene with Lucas Black where she said, "You know, I never really wanted this baby," which makes no sense coming from her. If they had made her this wife. Who was married to this husband who was like a crappy dude, and Lucas Black was looking after her, and she, by all appearances, really wanted to have this baby, and then has this monologue where she says, "You know, I never really wanted to have this baby." Oh, that's a revelation. But for this crappy waitress who's smoking all the time to say, "You know, I never really wanted to have this baby," Lucas Black should say, "No, duh."
That would have been a much better written scene. I agree.
Name one character in this movie who accomplished anything. Besides the war.
Dennis Hopper. Dennis Quaid blows up. You're right. Actually, yeah. Kelly Wand is right. He just blows up his diner. He doesn't hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, hold on.
Phil Chekhov's gas is still working. I mean, that's good.
But the angel still screams, no, or something, doesn't it? Because
he doesn't want. Because the diner is going to. He liked that diner.
I like that you can cut the wings off with a knife, but if you get blown up, your wings are still. Totally fine.
Okay, wait, hold on. I have an answer for this, Kelly Wand. Do you want to know somebody in this movie who accomplishes something? Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Hold on.
The baby.
No, it didn't.
Hold on. I'm sure there's someone. Okay. So the angel Gabriel jumps on the police car when they're trying to get away, and Jeep Hudson slams on the brakes. It kills Audrey. That's right, but it doesn't hurt the angel.
Yeah, he only kills his friends.
And why, by the way, when they get in a car wreck, it's the most random thing. We're going to wreck the car, and then we're going to climb up on a mountain.
Yeah.
It's so random.
And then fall off and not get hurt, because he has the instructions, which we also never looked at what the instructions were at all. But, like, not even.
And by the way, is the baby okay? Yeah, the baby's fine.
And not even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Audrey's dead off screen.
You don't have any sense of where the baby is, or is the baby in a tree or a cactus somewhere? We don't know.
Well, I don't think they had the baby actor working that day, so they had to shoot around that. That's kind of what it looked like. Hold on, I'm sure there's somebody in this movie who accomplished something. Dingus, help me out here. Somebody accomplished something at some point. I know that had to have happened.
I win.
I think you do.
See? That's pretty bad screenwriting. Because he sets up characters with the monologues.
Right.
And well, Michael accomplishes. What are you talking about? Michael accomplishes.
No, he doesn't. He gets killed, and then God brings him back, so he can go. All right. So that's God doing it. He failed.
Okay, God
He susses out God's intentions, even though God has given him an order. This is what I want. Michael knows what God's actual intentions are, and God rewards him for that. Michael stays the course. What are you talking about?
Now, you know, I'm with Kelly Wand on this, Dingus, and you know who else even doesn't accomplish anything in the movie? God. Because he sets out to end the world, and he doesn't even do it.
Right.
Nobody in this movie gets anything done.
Right.
Which, by the way,
including the ice cream man. He attacks mostly.
That's right. You just get shot.
The old woman.
Yeah. I wish at the end we had a sense that Gabriel was going to start a new faction or something, because otherwise I don't understand why they're driving around in this truck with all those guns.
Well, because it's the end of the world. Everybody's dead and possessed by angels and has shark teeth and black eyes.
But they don't really, because they couldn't afford it.
Yeah, but surely when they have the Deus Ex Machina and God says, oh, you know, never mind, all those possessed angels go away and those people just go back to going, oh, why am I at this diner?
Oh, I know. Well, it's because there's probably like bands of looters roaming the earth. And it's like, you know, it's post-apocalypse. You need guns in a post-apocalypse.
I had more thought than the movie, actually.
But what I would have liked was the idea if Gabriel had said, if there had been a sense that Gabriel was now going to amass his own army to then try to give God his actual uber intention and still destroy these people, that there was actually still something to fight for. Otherwise, it's just a cool shot of a bunch of guns in the back of a truck.
Well, yeah. Duh.
Well, I know,
which we've
duh.
Seen in every other movie.
That's you know what? That's
and it always works too. The audience always goes, "Whoa!"
Is that what your audience did?
Yeah, they did it in Eli. They didn't. It's every movie.
How does that go again? Do that again for us, Kelly Wand.
Whoa!
1, 2, 3. Not only you and me, got 180 degrees, and I'm caught in between. Counting 1, 2, 3, beat upon
my. I think it's time to move on to 3x3. You guys ready?
Oh, I could talk about Legion all night.
We did.
And speaking of the voiceover in Legion, that's a nice segue there. If you can call going back to something we already talked about a segue.
It's a back way.
Dingus, what is this week's 3x3? What do you got for us?
What?
Isn't it Dingus? Kelly Wand. Kelly Wand, what is this week's 3x3?
The three best voiceovers in movies ever.
And is Legion eligible?
Sure.
Okay, good. I wanted to make
it's
sure.
It's my number one, actually. Spoiler.
And Dingus, since you are going to be bringing us next week's 3x3, you have to go first. What is your number three pick for movie voiceovers?
My number three pick for voiceovers. Wait, Kelly, they have to be good voiceovers?
No.
Okay,
just
good. Right. Well,
just any voiceovers. Well, what does the character breaking the fourth wall count as voiceover? Because it's a voiceover with a video feed.
Well, I did make a distinction here that it does have to be sort of.
And does the voiceover have to be through the whole movie, or because some movies just start with voiceover? Like,
well, there's a difference.
That doesn't matter. Yeah, there's a difference between voiceover and just
there are minimum line count for voiceover ratings.
So actually, technically, you guys are both wrong. Voiceover simply means you're not seeing the character on the screen speaking. It just means it can be narration. It can be an internal monologue. Voiceover encompasses a lot of different things. It's not just a narrator, and it's not just one character's thoughts. It can be either.
Wait, it's just my list. I can make those rules.
Well, you use the term voiceover. I'm just, because I actually had to look it up. I was like, okay, can Ian and narrate? Shut up. I'm trying to be meticulous. Mm. So it's fairly broad when you just say voiceover, when you're not necessarily talking about narrator or internal monologue. Uh-huh. At least that's what I'm going with.
We're not talking about an actor's voice on the phone, though.
Or like an exterior shot of someone talking inside the house, and you just hear them, and they're like transitioning.
Yeah, from off camera. Yeah, because
right.
I just have three instances of people talking off camera. Is that okay?
It's fine.
Dingus, what's your number three? What do you got for us?
I just had three things when I wasn't watching the TV at the time. All right, my number three.
Write your eyes, quote.
As per usual, I will just give you a quote, and we'll see what you guys do with it. How about that?
Okay.
All right, here we go. A few words here about following people. People know they're being followed when they turn around and they see someone following them. They can't tell they're being followed if you get there first.
Midnight Run.
No.
I know this. I've seen it. Rats. I just want to say, well, never mind. I'm not going to. Rats, I don't know. That's a good one. I give
Kelly,
up.
Kelly, anything?
No.
All right, then I'm going to do another quote because I love the voice.
Real quick, before you do the other quote, there's this movie called Looker with Albert Finn.
Susan Day.
Exactly. And there's a chase scene in the movie where the bad guys have a gun that or something where if it flashes in your eyes, you get possessed or something. So Albert Finney's in a car and they're running away and there's a bad guy in the car chasing him. So, and he's trying to like get Albert Finney to see his, he's trying to see Albert Finney's face and to flash him with this device. So the bad guy's chasing him in the car and they pull the car up in front of Albert Finney's car. And so now Albert Finney's in the back and the guy's chasing him are in the front. And Albert Finney just turns. He just hangs a right because the car's in front of him and gets away that way. So, I just wanted to say, I just remember in Looker, it sort of establishes the rule that if you're going to chase someone, you need to stay behind them. It's hard to do it when you pull in front of them. So, okay, Dingus, give us another point from your number three pick.
All right. Now a few words on looking for things. When you go looking for something specific, your chances of finding it are very bad because of all the things in the world. You're only looking for one of them. When you go looking for anything at all, your chances of finding it are very good because of all the things in the world, you're going to find some of them.
This is good. All right, what is it? I give up. These are good. I think I've seen this movie, though.
This is from a movie called Zero Effect.
Good Lord.
I haven't seen it.
Lawrence Kasdan.
Yes. No, actually, Jake Kasdan.
Oh, his son. That's right. Good Lord. How could I do that? Yeah. Director of that Dewey Cox Walk Hard movie, if I'm mistaken. It's a great follow-up to Zero Effect.
I love Zero Effect. I have a real soft spot in my heart for this film, and the voiceover is a big reason why.
And is it Bill Pullman, or is it's his sidekick? Oh, it's Ben Stiller and Bill Pullman. Good Lord.
Yeah, it's Ben Stiller and Bill Pullman. And Ben Stiller is really good, and I have a fairly low tolerance for him, and he's great in this because he's totally restrained for most of the film, and Bill Pullman's the one being wacky. And this is the one I had another one that I almost put in that had that sort of I'm writing a story or I'm writing this down and this is the justification for the voiceover, which kind of was annoying to me about Youth in Revolt. Like the reason we have a voiceover is because I'm writing my memoirs and you can see me typing them and you see Bill Pullman typing them and it sort of has this flavor of somebody saying, you know, we need to have a little bit more. Can you have him write something and then we can do a voiceover? But it works so well with him doing this voiceover and having Bill Pullman just looking around pensively and weirdly and taking off his jacket and just doing all this weird, weird stuff. Generally, and it just makes the film for me.
Is Bill Pullman doing the voiceover or is Ben Stiller doing the voiceover?
No, it's all Bill Pullman. It's okay. As if he's writing his memoirs. And when he's saying a word about looking for things, he's sort of giving his philosophy on being a private eye. Because he's such an unorthodox kind of guy.
Nice.
And I love this. I love that film.
And Kelly Wand, you have not seen it.
No.
Okay.
I meant to. I was getting mixed up with The Minus Man.
Very different. Very
it's
different
got a math film. Title.
I see. Right, right.
Oh, very nice.
that can be a 3x3. Top movies with math titles. My number three voiceover, and I so rarely get the chance to roll out classic movies. I was just tickled to be able to roll out The Birds when we were talking about our gas station scenes. And this is another situation like that. This is a classic movie I hadn't seen forever, and I only watched it in the last year. And it opens with a famous voiceover of William Holden floating in the pool in Sunset Boulevard. And I imagine back then, that must have been so – because it's so – like, I remember how cool it was in American Beauty that Kevin Spacey is doing the voiceover, but he's dead. And he tells you that early on. And that's such a ripoff of Sunset Boulevard, and it works so well in that because you see the body in the pool, and William Holden says, "Yep, that's me. I'm dead." And he's so self-deprecating throughout the movie. His character is so cocksure and kind of arrogant, and you almost don't like him. But when he's dead in heaven doing his voiceover, he's kind of aware of what a dope he is. And I love that. I love the way that those are bookends in Sunset Boulevard. And that it's just so classic, and it's one of those classic movies that you watch, and you're like, oh, yeah, of course this is a classic movie. It's still good.
So that's why it's old.
Because it's good?
Thank you, James Cameron.
So there's my number three, Sunset Boulevard. Everything else, that's about that. You know, that and The Birds, I've now pretty much blown my wad for talking about classic movies. That's all I can do. So.
You suck. Lucky. That was my number one. I'm going to save us time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Don't do that. Wait, and then tell what you like about it.
I was going to say what he said.
Sorry.
Well, just so you know, if one of you guys reveals my number one before we get to it, I'm still going to talk about my number one.
Good. Play it close to the vest, Dingus.
That's what I'm going
to I hate
do.
To waste anyone's time. Kelly except Wand- for the hour they already listened.
What is your... What's your number three?
My number three bitchin' voiceover movie.
You could just say it's Sunset Boulevard, by the way, and scooch everything else up to one place.
No, I'll waste a little time for everyone. Okay. Well, I want to do the quote like Dingus does.
Oh, yeah, good. Okay.
Yay!
And then you have to guess it, and then we'll call it fun.
Rock and roll.
Jimmy was the kind of guy that rooted for bad guys in the movies.
Is this a Marx Brothers movie?
Oh, you've seen this. That's such an easy...
I really don't know. Dingus, do you know this one?
I have no idea.
Give us another line, Kelly Wand, from this movie.
Whenever we needed money, we'd rob the airport.
Oh, good fellas.
Yeah.
Come on, that's a great voiceover.
Isn't it? Is it a great voiceover, or is it a great movie that happens to have a voiceover?
It's both.
Okay.
Although it gives away that he lives. But I guess you know that because it's based on the book that he wrote, so I guess you know.
Are you sure there's a voiceover in that, and it's not just him talking to the screen?
Dingus.
No. What's wrong with you?
Sorry, I apologize.
Dingus, you're such a dingus.
I agree.
Dingus, what's your number two? Or should we talk about Goodfellas? We can talk about Goodfellas some more.
You think the voiceover is overrated for Goodfellas?
No, not at all. I think Goodfellas, like, does the voiceover bring anything new to the mix other than being, here's
details. Details about the mob life, which are fascinating and can't, like, when they found Carbone in the meat truck, he was frozen so stiff it took them 3 days to thaw him out for the autopsy.
Very good.
So you can't show that visually.
Good. Nice.
All right. Well, I'm going to totally violate what I said before. I'm just going to admit that Goodfellas is my number one, and Kelly's completely right. It's the best use of voiceover in a movie of all time.
Ah, I'm sorry.
Of all time?
Yes.
Wow.
I'd go with that.
You guys are hardcore. There's so many different things voiceovers do, though. So, Dingus, why do you say that? I like that. That's good that it brings out details that you can't show. Is that what you had in mind, Dingus?
It absolutely does. He's absolutely right about that. And do you want me to wait till my number one, or should we just talk about it?
No, let's talk about it. Because Kelly's already, you know, Kelly says he's going to be sullen and not say anything about Sunset Boulevard. And so we'll backload it.
Guy's ruined it.
Well, there's a couple reasons why I would say that. And one of them is just dovetailing off of what Kelly said about them finding the dude in the truck. There's this wonderful moment. And I think about think about this line two or three times a week. And this is the line. In prison, dinner was always a big thing. We had pasta course, blah, blah, blah. He talks about pasta course. But he says, Paulie did the prep work. He was doing a year for contempt, and he had this wonderful system for doing the garlic. He used a razor, and he would slice it so thin.
Ah, nice.
He used to liquefy in the pan with a little oil. It was a good system. And I remember seeing Goodfellas in a theater when I was in college, and for such a brutal movie, it made me unbelievably hungry. It's a great food movie. Mm-hmm. And that whole thing about doing the garlic, and I cook. I'm the cook in my family, and I use garlic 3-4 times a week. And every time I take out cloves of garlic to cut them, I think of that line. And just like what Kelly said, there are ways around. Scorsese could go about showing all of the things he tells you, but telling you what Paulie is doing as he's slicing the garlic with the razor blade adds such a layer of richness to the movie. And he does, and this is pervasive. There is so much richness added. And, you know, often we think of voiceover as an excuse or as a way to get around having to show something. But there are so many things that are told that I would prefer not to be shown, that this is the perfect – I don't know if you would call it the exception to the rule. It's a great voiceover.
It also counterpoints some of the like when he goes, that's when I knew I would never have come back from Florida alive. Like the look on his face is kind of deadpan. Like if right. he hadn't had the voiceover, he would have reacted – oh, he's gonna put a hit on me. But the voiceover makes his underacting better. I guess that's
right. Yeah, that's true. And like when the cops get the drop on him outside his house in the arrest scene, to say nothing of his manic day and how the voiceover works into his manic day when the helicopters are chasing him. The cop puts his gun to his head and yells at him.
That's how I knew they were cops.
Yeah, he goes, yeah, if they had wise guys, I wouldn't have heard a thing.
Uh-huh.
And you get a different layer of what he's talking about. And the other thing I want to say is that Lorraine Bracco also has a voiceover. And hers is so interesting because it's very clear. It's like she's giving an interview. She does a different thing to the quality of her voice. So it's clear that she's giving this information from a different perspective from the woman you see on the screen. Whereas Ray Liotta is great. I mean, his voice is great, and it's sort of an iconic voiceover. But hers, you have this real feel of like, yeah, I'm going to tell you the story from my vantage over here. I couldn't stand him at first, and it's just got this amazing quality that totally wins me over, and it's a great counterpoint to the very storytelling that Ray Liotta is doing.
Good.
Greatest movie ever.
Well, all right, so that's this week's 3x3.
good pick, Kelly. Thanks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, I'm the only one with a number one left. How about that?
We still have number twos, yeah.
Yeah, so my number two is The Thin Red Line, which is one of my favorite war movies because, and it's a little uneven, but that's okay with me, it's very much about rather than the battles, it's about the people in the situation. And the movie is more than happy to share their thoughts with us. And there are even, I think, just bits of like the narrator's poetry in here. And the whole thing comes across, I've said this before, it's the cinematic version of the Iliad, which is a story about war. It's about all the different participants of the war. It's not so much about the battles as the mindset, the psychology, the thoughts of the people involved. And the voiceover in The Thin Red Line, I think, does a fantastic job of capturing this in a movie. And I'm specifically thinking of, there's one where Nick Nolte is getting his orders from John Travolta on a troop transport. And John Travolta's got this ridiculous little mustache. And Nick Nolte is so amazing in this movie. He's just, you see people playing characters in the military, and they're so unbelievable as soldiers. It doesn't work. Like Tobey Maguire in Brothers, this remake of a Danish movie. He's got the haircut and he looks a little crazy, but you never get the sense that he's an actual soldier. Nick Nolte in Thin Red Line is an incredible performance. And to hear him muttering to himself, this voiceover, while he's receiving orders from the insipid John Travolta, is just this great image of the hierarchy of war, I think. So Thin Red Line is my number two pick.
I haven't seen that movie in forever, and I totally miss it because I love Terrence Malick movies.
And you know what? It's so much. Yeah, if someone's going to do a cinematic version of the Iliad, it's Terrence Malick. Who else? Yeah.
He does really good languid. You got to be in a mood for languid movies.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that's my number two. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm done.
We're to your number two, Kelly Wand. No, Dingus is number. You're number two, Kelly Wand.
Actually, I should have done my number two, then you, then Kelly.
All this,
I have no idea where we are.
Right, preempting each other's number one. It's really confusing me. So, Dingus, you're number two.
Okay, unless Kelly wants to. Do you have one more left?
Fine. You know what? We're going to. So it went Dingus's three. Let's go back over this. Dingus, what was your number three?
I feel so bad for listeners right now. I really apologize.
My number three was Zero Effect.
Kelly Wan, what was your number three?
Goodfellas.
Okay, number two, mine was Thin Red Line.
Right. Now, Dingus.
Dingus, what's your number two? Okay, we're back on track. Yeah, that's just that we have everybody's number one except mine is preempted. So, Dingus, what's your number two?
All right, my number two, and as per usual, I'm going to give you guys a quote, so suck it. Here it comes. Right. It's not like I'm a lesbian or anything. I'm attracted to the person. It's just that all the people I'm attracted to happen to be girls.
Opposite of sex?
Nope.
Monster?
Lesbian. wait. I've seen this.
Do another one.
Being suspended is like getting a paid vacation.
Oh, yeah. Punished? Great. Yeah. Damn, that's a good one.
Youth in Revolt?
No. I know what it is. Alexander Rushmore. Payne.
Oh, Election.
Yeah.
It's Election.
Damn, that's a good one.
That is
it's got many voiceovers, too. You get everyone.
That's why I love it, because it's got a lot of different people's point of view, and there's a reason that you have these people voicing this point of view in a voiceover rather than showing it. It's a tool. Voiceovers uses a tool here, and for me, it adds to the experience rather than sort of being an excuse. And from the very first moment where you see Tracy Flick raise her hand and he says, "That's Tracy Flick," you get a sense of getting their point of view in a different way so that it's not revealed to other characters. And I love that it shifts like that.
And like Goodfellas, it has the freeze frame and then you go into the voiceover.
Right, right, right.
There's no voiceover in About Schmidt or Sideways, is there?
No.
I don't think so, no.
Okay, I don't think so.
All right, good pick, Dingus.
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, well, okay. I was thinking of Alexander Payne's movies after election.
right.
Okay, Kelly Wand, what is your number two?
Do a quote from my number two.
Okay.
Thanks for coming. Please stay for the end credits. If you're wondering who the best boy is, it's somebody's nephew.
Oh, God, what is that? I know that.
Don't forget to validate your parking. And to all you good people in the Midwest.
Kiss, kiss, sorry. Bang, bang.
Yeah.
Did you know
sorry,
that
we sing fuck so much?
Yeah, that was on my short list, but go ahead.
Do you think Shane Black wrote that, or did Robert Downey Jr. just improvise all that?
No, I think Shane Black wrote it.
Okay.
I do.
That's
too.
My number two.
Good.
It's a great movie. Underrated.
And the voiceover, one
I
of my
that,
problems.
I don't like that it disappears.
Yeah, exactly. The voiceover isn't used consistently. I mean, it's a great opening of the movie, and then it comes in at the end, but it gets lost somewhere at about the middle point, and I wish it wouldn't. I mean, I wish there was more of that in there, because it's so funny. It's funny stuff.
Well, I think the momentum of the movie doesn't favor the meditative.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I think in Election, the voiceover kind of cuts out towards the second half, too. Because you kind of get, stuff's happening all in one day, and so the voiceovers would just be, oh yeah, and then an hour later, something else.
Well, you know, he also seems to be doing something with it. Like, wait, let's see that again, or hold on. Where he, like, freezes scenes, and he seems to be in control of how the movie is being shown by the way he's talking. And at least I seem to remember that from the early scenes, where he says, wait, hold on. And then that sense of him being the guy who's telling the story and in control of it just sort of fades for the middle act of the movie, and then we just have a movie, and then it sort of comes back at the end.
Yeah, the very end.
Right.
And then, yeah, he breaks the fourth wall at the end. So you've just been watching shenanigans.
But I still love it, and I love that pick because it's just so enjoyable to listen to.
I like that it's also not like other movies, which is a big selling point for me. That's why I hated Legion so much, was because it was just a pastiche of other stuff. It was a pastiche of John Carpenter movies, pastiche of Terminator.
Well, not everyone can be a winner, Kelly Wand. They can't all be winners. What's the line?
Like, what if John Tenney had been the only survivor?
That would have been great. Yeah, it would have been subversive. But
that would have been surprising, right?
So the voiceover...
Just the savior.
The voiceover fading out in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang leads nicely into my favorite instance of voiceover in a movie this week, which is my number one pick. And it's... As I was watching the movie, I was worried it was going to lose this voiceover. I was worried it was going to do the same thing, because the voiceover is used to establish the character, and I was like, okay, this is really good, I like what they're doing with it, but as the momentum picks up, and as the plot starts taking over, this is probably going to fade away. It's like you were talking about, Kelly Wand, that you suspect is the case with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and I think that's right. In this movie, that does not happen, and if anything, the voiceover becomes so much more significant. Now, the movie, I don't think either of you guys have seen it. Steven Soderbergh's last movie is called The Informant, with Matt Damon as an informant. And the voiceover is used early on in the movie to establish what a scatterbrained, sort of petty man he is. And it's used to comedic effect. And there's great stuff in there. It makes me think of Nicolas Cage in The Weatherman, where his wife has told him, don't forget tartar sauce when you go to the store. So there's scenes of him going to the store, and he's doing voiceover. Nicolas Cage is amazing at this kind of stuff, and I'm surprised you guys didn't pick Adaptation, by the way. And in The Weatherman, he's going tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce, and then he just starts just random flight things, just thoughts coming into his head. So they do this with Matt Damon's character in The Informant. But to say much more would be a spoiler, so I don't want to talk too much about it. But things get revealed as the informant progresses, and the voiceover ends up being a full-fledged participant at an incredible moment of reckoning in this movie. So rather than it being a gimmick, what the voiceover is in The Informant is something that I can't talk about without ruining the movie, but when you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's just a great instance of the moment of reckoning, and the voiceover is there, front and center, playing a huge part. And I love the voiceover in The Informant. So, and it's also voiceover in an unreliable narrator. Like, voiceover is a great way, and I think of Fight Club, where the narrator is such a big part of what you don't know about what's going on. And the voiceover works as a great way to introduce and further this concept of an unreliable narrator. And The Informant does a little bit of that.
No one picked Fight Club? Interesting.
Well, I had a bunch of other ones that I was thinking of, and I was this time for I just decided not to shy away from the obvious pick because I thought you guys would pick Goodfellas, and that's what happened. But I watched Goodfellas again, and I just couldn't avoid picking it. It's just so perfect. The way it uses it is just so great, and I just wanted to dip into it to see a couple of scenes and let it go, and I couldn't turn the movie off. And so for once, I just decided I'm not going to try to game the list this time. I'm just going to pick the one that I think is my favorite.
Yeah. It's okay.
It's the Jaws of mob movies. If it's on, you kind of get sucked back in.
I considered the voiceover for Road Warrior because I
thought of that one. Yeah.
And I love the reveal at the end that the voiceover is the feral kid.
Yeah, that's he's an old man, and he sounds so, yeah.
Yeah, it's obviously the feral kid got cleaned up.
yeah. Did you think the man who wasn't there was a good voiceover?
Yeah. I love that noir stuff. I mean, Billy Bob Thornton, too, is just...
What about No Country for Old Men, that very beginning with Tommy Lee Jones? Where he's kind of sounding all world-weary.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I like how that book ends it.
Yeah.
Wait. Oh, okay. He doesn't do a voiceover at the end, though.
Yeah. Well, he's in the scene. Yeah. Like he introduces the action, like he introduces the world, and then the movie ends with him recalling his dream.
Right. And it feels very much like a continuation of that to me.
Well, and that's in a way a reveal is the lead character in No Country for Old Men is Ed Tom and not,
Anton Chigurh or Josh Brolin. Right. But he also sounds defeated in the first voiceover and at the end too.
Right.
So it's the bookend of defeat.
And then I also thought of the voiceover, some of the great voiceover in Assassination of Jesse James, which isn't necessarily good voiceover so much as it's great prose from the book that's used to wonderful effect at great points in the movie. So, I mean, it's good voiceover, but it's not like some of the things we've talked about where the voiceover is a full participant or where it reveals further details. This is just great stuff from the movie that they knew better than to not use.
Well, the one that was tough for me to not include was the Royal Tenenbaums, because this is a pure voiceover of somebody who's not even in the movie, just giving you commentary. And I love a couple of those moments.
Oh, yeah.
That counts.
Moments, you know, seconds after saying this, Royal realized this was true.
That is great. Yeah.
And that just gives you such a great feeling. It just gets you into the movie perfectly, and it's just such a great part of the framing device.
Yeah. Good. All right. Do you guys know if
No Wes Anderson. Ooh. Whoa. What did I say? Something stupid.
Do you guys know if there's is there a voiceover in Edge of Darkness, the movie we're going to see next week? I don't know. There might be.
January is not good for movies.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, there are things that I'm looking forward to seeing. They're just in very limited release.
Right.
It's just, yeah. So okay. Next week, let's see Edge of Darkness. What do you guys think of that?
That sounds good. And what's our, do we need to have a three?
Oh, that's right. Next? Yeah. So who's up? I think it's me, right?
No, it's me.
My 3x3, three movies with Mel Gibson. Dingus, what do you got?
1, 2, 3.
What's the 3x3 for next week, Dingus?
All right.
Sounds pretty excited about it.
I am very excited. It's very simple. Then I think everybody can grok it. Yeah. It's a 3x3 inspired by a thread on Quarter to Three.
Oh, God.
Tom considers that a red flag. Interesting.
Top three films that have spiky fruits in them. No. This is a thread started by a fella named...
Oh, dear.
Warning. And the 3x3 for next week is the best use of the F word in a film.
Mm. I like it. I think swearing's cool and funny.
But so I'm the word... What is the F word? Fun?
I think you know what the F word is. Do you want me to say it?
So three best uses of the F word. Okay, good. Good. I've got some ideas.
Can it be in the same movie, like three different occasions?
You can do whatever you want, Kelly Wan. If you want three uses in the same movie, go for it. I'm just asking for three uses. If you have a movie that you think uses the F word particularly well all the way through, or you think an actor does in one particular line, then go for it.
Awesome. All right.
Do they have to be G-rated?
Yes, they're only Disney movies or Pixar. You can use Pixar too.
Okay, good. So we'll be back next week with our three favorite uses of the F word. And we will be discussing Edge of Reason and Sanity. Oh, I can't remember the name of the stupid movie. Edge of Reason?
Passion. Edge of Passion.
Edge of Dark. No, you guys, I'm going to go see the wrong movie and it's going to be y'all's fault. Edge of Darkness. There. Yes. So see that with Mel Gibson. Hopefully he will call some woman sugar tits in the movie, if we're lucky.
Best use of sugar tits.
And we'll see you then. So thanks very much. I am Tom Chick. I've been here with Christian Malarkey.
Christian Morosky.
And Kelly Wand.
Oh, it's angels.